You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. I'm Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton, Chief Creative Officer, after a two-week break. How's it going, Michael?
Pretty good. Enjoying my brand new iPhone 7 Plus, which does not explode.
And this episode is brought to you by what this week?
This episode is brought to you by the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 recall. Please, for the love of God, return your phone.
Seriously, people, if you still have a Note 7 and you haven't returned it for a replacement, please go do that. The latest from Samsung is that they have only just gotten back over half of the Note 7s they sold in the States. So this is going by at a very slow pace. And it certainly hasn't been helped by the fact that they sort of botched the recall from the start and consumers didn't really know what to do. And the carriers haven't been much help either. We thought it would be bad for them, but based on the way the recall's gone so far, it's even worse. Because there are still people out there with phones that could blow up. And to make matters worse, with the various warnings from regulatory agencies, we are seeing actual warnings being given out on flights now. So if you go on a flight, you might actually hear the captain or a flight attendant say something like, would the owners of any Galaxy Note 7 phones please turn them off? Do not charge them and keep them in your bag. Thank you. Boop. Like, I've seen tweets all over the place from people reporting that something like that has been said on a flight before it takes off. So we're not just looking at this PR hit. It's not just this single event that's damaged them and they're going to bounce back. It's sustained. People go on flights and they're hearing that Samsung phones are dangerous and not to be used. And like,
well, and it's true.
Yeah. And yeah, like the longer this goes on, the worse it gets for them because yeah, like people are basically learning to associate their phones with danger, which is not good. As it is, it's like, there's been a bunch of weird things. Like they're pushing a software update to the broken ones where it'll warn you that you have to return it every time you turn it on or plug it in. They also pushed a software update where it will only let you charge it up to 60% and then it stops charging it to try and prevent the battery issue from happening. I don't know. There's just been a lot of weird stuff going on with that. And it like I said, the longer it goes on, the worse it gets for them. So I'm hopeful that they'll kind of pick it up and that people will start returning the rest of the phones.
So let's move on to the bigger news of the week, because we've talked about Samsung quite a bit in the last episode. So something interesting came up this week, which I find fascinating. Yes. And somewhat unexpected. That Apple supposedly has interest in buying McLaren, or at least that's what the title of this article is from the CBC, written by Jacqueline Hansen. Now, is it that there is the rumor that they are interested in buying the company entirely, or is it more of a collaboration, or more about buying, acquiring certain patents and technology? Because this article seems to say that the interest is in the patents and the technology of McLaren.
Yes. So the rumor originally goes that they are currently in talks with McLaren to discuss a total buyout or a strategic partnership. It depends what both parties are willing to go for. But the consensus seems to be that Apple is primarily interested in McLaren's consulting group, who leverages McLaren technology and McLaren hardware to develop solutions for non-race car things. For example, they actually built a system for Heathrow Airport that more efficiently manages the takeoff and landing pattern for all the planes that go through Heathrow.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
They also built a system for a sports team that tracks injuries and the impact on a player's ability to play so that coaches can actually see in real time, I shouldn't put this person out on the field. I should let them rest, that kind of thing. Because one thing that they've honed over the years that they're very good at is measuring things. They have come up with novel solutions for capturing a great deal of data in real time and processing it in real time because they need to be able to see on the fly the performance of a race car. They even pioneered VR simulators before VR came back with Oculus and the Vive. They were building VR simulators for their cars years ago. So this is a group within McLaren that develops this tech and works with other companies to create solutions. And like I said, the consensus seems to be that Apple's primarily interested in that. Which says to me that Apple doesn't want to build a race car.
Well, what's interesting to me is on the subject of technology is that, and I don't think this is something a lot of people think about or know, that a lot of the high-tech stuff that you take for granted in modern consumer cars that we can all afford, it all trickled down from Formula One. For example, if you just look at, let's look at a company like Volkswagen, when they came out, you know, a few years back with the paddle shifter technology for their cars with the dual clutch transmission. I mean, that was in Formula One and that eventually got into consumer cars. So a lot of this stuff that has like a meaningful impact, you know, that stuff eventually ends up in consumer cars. What to me strikes me as strange is in this CBC article here, and I'm just going to quote, it says, Brody suspects that along with engineering talent, Apple's interested in McLaren's patents and its racing brand. And he says, one of the ways you can really derive brand value for consumer vehicles is through racing. BMW has done a lot of it. Ferrari's done it a lot. So I think there's probably some deep brand value for Apple owning a racing car brand, which can then push downstream into other lines of products, other lines of vehicles. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, why would Apple care about owning a racing brand?
They don't.
Like, what brand value is in that? That doesn't do anything for them.
No, that has nothing to do with it. When Apple makes a car, it's going to be an Apple car. It's not going to be a McLaren with Apple tech in it. Like I said, what they're interested in is the tech. What they're interested in is the expertise because McLaren is basically on the cutting edge. They have a very focused attention to detail. They believe in craftsmanship. I mean, all of their cars are made by hand and they do a lot of bespoke stuff. Like, they're like the Bentley of race cars, and looking at photos of their facilities and how they do things, they basically already are if Apple was a car company. Like,
right.
I mean, their facility in England looks like something out of a Johnny Ive video. It's this beautiful all glass outside building with this roof, and they're next to a lake, and the rainwater goes down the roof into the lake so that nothing is wasted, and it runs on solar power and all these other details. Like, it, in fact, it was actually designed by the same group that helped to design the new Apple spaceship campus that's under construction.
Which is also an impressive feat.
Yes. So they have very similar sensibilities, which is why I think they work well together, which is why I think Apple went after them, because a lot of their interests align. And
well, wouldn't it not make sense if they are building a car, which I think is fairly safe to say right now, that to collaborate and work with people that understand cars better than you do, which is to say that Apple doesn't understand cars at all. They don't have, you know, engineers that specialize in cars.
They do now.
They obviously do now. So working with people like the creme de la creme of talent at McLaren makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's really a perfect alliance. And the thing is, the tech that McLaren has will enable Apple to do a whole bunch of stuff. Like, one thing McLaren is primarily really good at is working with carbon fiber. All of their cars are made of carbon fiber. And one of the things about building an electric car is that you want it to be as light as possible to increase the battery life. And what better way to make a car lighter than to make it entirely out of carbon fiber? And who knows how to build cars entirely out of carbon fiber? McLaren. So they can give Apple pointers. They can give Apple access to some of their tech, some of their production pipeline magic. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there that Apple could use to build a better car. So, I mean, if this deal goes through, if they invest in McLaren, if they gain an exclusive license to whatever, then the end product is going to be that much better as a result.
Yeah, and staying on topic of acquisitions or possible acquisitions, Apple has acquired machine learning startup Tuple Jump. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Tuple Jump. So they've acquired a machine learning company, which makes sense as they have obviously spent a lot of time and effort to try to make Siri better, to try to make machine learning better on the iPhone. Locally, obviously, they tried to do all the processing as much as they can on the phone.
Yeah.
And they've been able to showcase with iOS 10 that, okay, well, maybe it's not as good in some ways as what Google does, but it's still quite impressive what they can do without collecting all of your personal data and funneling all that through their servers.
Yeah, considering that they don't actually take all of your data and put it up to the cloud, and when they do, it's incredibly jumbled and made private.
Especially with photos. Like, I can type snow in the search and it finds it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the that stuff works incredibly well. It's also really good at finding faces now locally. So yeah, all of that is extremely good considering it's all running on the phone. And it'll only get better over time as they continue to acquire companies and develop their tech and figure out ways to do stuff while keeping it private, making sure that they can't individually identify people, continuing to work on their differential privacy algorithms. Yeah, this is stuff that we won't see the benefit of for years. Like, they acquire companies and we don't see a windfall out of it for at least 2 years. They bought Authentech, and then a year and a half later, Touch ID.
Well, even Siri, going back that far, was not their technology.
No, they actually bought Siri.
In fact, it's kind of surprising when you really think about how much stuff wasn't invented by them. I mean, iTunes, the app, was not even their invention.
Yeah, which of course some people will. I mean, iTunes is kind of a contentious issue at the best of times.
Kind of.
Yeah, we know. We all know. We all know the score there. It sure would be nice if they did a complete Swift rewrite and made us a pure Apple Music app.
That whatever happened with that. But do we? I don't know if we need to spend any time on that. Because we talked about this, I swear, like 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
There was some rumor that was going to happen.
Well, I mean, that's what the rumor was is essentially what we got, which is Apple Music baked into iTunes.
Right. To me, it's a matter of not if, but when. It is a matter of time.
I mean, yeah.
We're not going to go another 5 years with the same cruddy app, are we?
We have so far. I don't know. I don't know what their plan is with iTunes. I would like to see them do a separate Apple Music app. I mean, we're already kind of doing that on iOS. Like, we have the Music app, and then we have the iTunes Store app. I think the same thing ought to happen on macOS, but who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe next year, but probably not.
Now, have you seen any of the, because I don't know anything about this Tuple Jump company. So I don't know, like, do they have any demoable products or services?
I really don't know. I skimmed the Mac Rumors article about it. I'm sure they do some particularly novel thing that Apple bought them for. Tuple Jump focused on simplifying data management techniques and creating tools to make it easy to deal with large quantities of data. They developed a PhiloDB open source project designed to use machine learning and analytics on massive amounts of data in real time. So that could be useful, for example, when dealing with sonar data from a self-driving car.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see where this
is going. Millions and millions of voice requests going into Siri every minute, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like it can help all the stuff that they work on, basically. Sure. So that's a strategic purchase if ever I saw one. And it's possible that their implementation is better than what the competition is doing. I don't know. I mean, Google's essentially the leader in this, and with TensorFlow and everything, they're doing a fairly good job. Although all of that is open sourced, and Apple is likely utilizing all of those technologies, I would guess. I don't know exactly what their stack is, but it's pretty likely that they're using some of that stuff. And that actually brings us to another news item that was filed today by Bloomberg, and that is that NVIDIA has posted some job postings that are very interesting. All three of them mention Apple, and one of them particularly mentions Mac NVIDIA drivers. So, A, there may be NVIDIA GPUs coming to Mac again. B, NVIDIA is the leader in machine learning hardware. Imagine a few racks of NVIDIA DGX1s powering Siri. That would be insane.
That's the first I've actually heard of that.
Yeah, they announced it when they announced the 1070 and 1080. So the DGX1 is a powerhouse GPU rack. It's not
not a consumer product.
No, it's not what you'd call a traditional GPU. It's the size of a server rack. And it contains multiple GPUs that are all interlinked with proprietary hardware and software. And the whole thing can be chained to other DGX1 racks. So you can have an entire server stack filled with them. And they all work together for one thing, machine learning.
Can you imagine what kind of frame rates you can get, like running any game, no matter what you throw at it, that processing power?
Well, I mean, the 1080 is pretty much that, though we're like, oh wait, no, the 1080 isn't even the fastest one now. They announced the Titan X1 or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the DGX1 is an incredibly powerful piece of hardware. And if NVIDIA seemingly is now in a strategic partnership with Apple, as these job postings suggest, it's probably not just consumer hardware that Apple's after. It would be the DGX1 chip. Because yeah, if they outfitted a server room with a bunch of these and put Siri on it, the number of, like, the efficiency and the speed at which they could train the AI would jump by a factor of 10. Like, the hardware is that good at machine learning. They've deliberately optimized this stuff to train AI, and it's really good at it. The benchmarks alone are just nuts. Like, it blows the competition completely away.
It's interesting that they've started to go in that direction from being sort of more single-minded, focus on gaming and just consumer-grade GPUs, to doing this other stuff, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, and they've kind of recognized the market need for it, and they've also recognized that GPUs are the superior hardware to run this stuff.
You know, I've never understood why Apple has continuously used AMD's ATI brand over. I'm not saying it's bad, because obviously they've made very good GPUs in the past, but I still, and maybe this is just my own weird unscientific feeling, and it probably is, but growing up, I used a lot of AMD. Back then it was ATI. I used NVIDIA, and NVIDIA hardware always performed better because, well, mainly their drivers integrated better with their hardware. And ATI historically in the 90s and early 2000s, before being acquired, had very poor software, which made their GPUs not run as smoothly as they could have. So I always have felt that NVIDIA GPUs were superior. And my understanding is that current NVIDIA GPUs are at least marginally superior. They seem to be always one step ahead of AMD.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't understand why Apple hasn't put them in their laptops, in their iMacs. I'm looking at a six-year-old MacBook Pro with an NVIDIA chip. I think that's the last time we had them.
Yeah, probably. I think for Apple, it's all about price. So they must get a better deal from AMD than they would get or have previously gotten from NVIDIA. Maybe now that they've entered into this partnership or whatever's going on, it's possible that NVIDIA gave them a better deal on the consumer GPUs, knowing that Apple would be buying a shit ton of DGX-1s.
I believe that. I mean, that may be part of it, but there's got to be more than that, more than just price. Because I can't imagine NVIDIA not wanting that deal of a huge customer
Apple. It's also possible that at the time, NVIDIA was unwilling to do the work to create drivers that support Mac.
Right.
I mean, there are drivers that support Mac, but they're older and they don't take into account the newer chipsets. So it's possible that NVIDIA decided to stop supporting Mac, essentially.
Yeah.
And that could have had some bearing in the decision. Like, Apple wasn't willing to have their own team make drivers. So they said, you know what? Fine, we'll work with AMD since they'll support us.
And we'll never really know.
Yeah,
because we don't know what happened behind closed doors.
Yeah, unless we have someone who was in on that, we won't know exactly what went down. But it's probably something like that, I would imagine. Though, given these job postings, that may have changed. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 6 months in terms of product announcements. I'm not Given that, I'm not actually sure what's going to go in the new MacBook Pro. My gut says because they've been working on it for so long and because it needs to be out in time for the holidays, it's going to have the new AMD Polaris chipset. It's not going to have NVIDIA. But it's possible that the new Mac Pro could be NVIDIA. It's possible that Macs next year will switch to NVIDIA. It's not clear exactly what will happen, but I guess we'll wait and see what plays out.
Okay, so I want to do some follow-up from some of our previous conversations about self-driving cars. And for those that listen to some of our older episodes from a few weeks back, we've sort of been on a trend of talking about self-driving cars. What does it mean? How is the technology evolving? How does it impact our lives? How will they impact our lives? And what's going on with Apple's rumored Apple Car, and whether or not they're going to have some kind of Uber-esque subscription service where you can just sign up and get an Apple Car. And then we talked about having entire fleets of Apple Cars. And we talked about how it's very obvious from a statistical, data-driven point of view that changing the entire planet to self-driving cars is obviously safer, reducing human error. But there's a lot of work, there's a lot of technical hurdles involved, pushback from society not wanting to relinquish control of being able to drive if they want to drive. So there was an article this week in the New York Times called Self-Driving Cars Gain Powerful Ally, the Government. And I just want to read, there's an opening article here from, I think it's Washington, D.C. It says, federal auto safety regulators on Monday made it official. They are betting the nation's highways will be safer with more cars driven by machines and not people. This is the government saying this. So yeah. Now the government has bought into the idea that clearly this is where we need to go and we need to build infrastructure to support this. What do you think about this?
Well, I think it was inevitable. You can't argue with the data. You just can't. Machines are far better at navigating roads than humans are. They react much faster. They don't fall asleep. They don't get drunk. They don't suffer from any of those issues. So it will always, without fail, get people to where they're going.
See, I feel like I've been misled because I grew up with the understanding that where we are going, we don't need roads.
Sadly, flying cars are highly unlikely unless we invent gravity drives or something.
I'm actually a little disappointed that the Canadian government hasn't said anything about this. No official stance that, no clear stance on this.
Well, I think it's because the previous government wasn't exactly friendly with progress, but I think we could see movement on it from the current Trudeau government. I mean, we have a minister of science again. We have a minister of innovation now. So I think we will likely see some sort of response in the near future because regulations do have to be created. And right now we're kind of in a limbo state in Canada. It's like people have Teslas now and the Teslas have autopilot, but what are the rules here around that? It's not clear.
Yeah, I mean, I think we will get there eventually, and I feel confident that Justin Trudeau will be around for two terms.
Oh yeah,
I think he'll get reelected again. Probably. So hopefully, within that time frame, that's quite a few years, that he will be able to do something about that. Now, in the U.S., going back to this article, they actually have developed guidelines.
Yeah,
and it says here. New guidelines were set on Monday, which stopped short of official regulations targeted for four main areas. The Department of Transportation announced a 15-point safety standard for the design and development of autonomous vehicles, called for states to come up with uniform policies applying to driverless cars, clarified how current regulations can be applied in driverless cars, and opened the door for new regulations on the technology. Those are all really good things to hear.
Yep. It's a huge step forward because now they've created this framework where it's like, we are ready to accept the idea of this tech moving forward in a big way. Like, they're basically prepping the legal framework of America for this tech to just kind of slide in. Like, that's what this does. It's basically, hey everyone, this is the thing now. We're asking these companies to speed it up. You all need to be ready to make laws for this.
Do you think car manufacturers will eventually get into this segment as autonomous cars become more and more and more popular?
I don't think they can avoid it. They either have to get with the program or perish.
So do you see a society in which Mercedes, BMW, Toyota, Honda, you name it, Nissan, that they are all developing autonomous cars?
Yeah, quite a few of them are developing autonomous technology.
Now, Audi. Do you think they'll just develop the technology, or you think they'll all be like, we'll see a Mercedes autonomous car, we'll see a BMW autonomous car, we'll see a Honda car?
It's hard to say. It depends how things shake out. Like, if we move to this place where people don't own cars anymore, then the luxury brands as we know them could cease to exist theoretically.
Because what differentiation would you have? They're self-driving.
Well, the only thing that gives me pause about that is that the differentiation can be the interior of the car.
Right.
Because so when you no longer need to drive, the space inside the car needs to be comfortable and enjoyable.
So that's where charging can become a premium. So let's say Apple Car is pretty, you know, it's nice, but pretty average and affordable, and it may cost you, let's say, $10 for the ride. But then a Mercedes autonomous car comes and it's got in-car entertainment and it's
heated
got
seats.
Heated seats.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's got like a, I don't know, like a wine bar inside, like, you know, and you pay $50 for the ride.
Yeah.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, that's a distinct possibility. Again, it's also dependent on whether car ownership continues to be a thing or not. Like if people will buy their own autonomous cars that take them wherever they want, or if we shift to cars as a service. I think for a while we'll end up with this gray area where people will be buying autonomous cars for a little while, like maybe 5 years. But ultimately, I think things will shift over to cars as a service. At which point, yeah, it's about the interior experience. Whether companies can survive on that business model, I don't know.
There probably
will be some companies that die out.
Or emerging. I see emerging of many companies, because once fossil fuels cannot be used anymore, you adapt or die, like you said.
Yeah. It's not that they're going to run out. Like, I mean, we don't really know when we're going to run out, but this is a sea change that's happening ahead of that. Like, we are shifting to electric cars. We are shifting to electric autonomous cars. And that's going to happen well before we run out of fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm. So, I thought scientists had felt pretty comfortable about predicting roughly when, like a time frame of when we're going to run out. I thought it was something like as soon as 50 years or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It shifts around. I'm not sure exactly what the latest figure is, but I think it's at some point before 2100.
It's not that far away. Even if it's 100 years, that's like one lifetime.
Well, yeah, I mean, and year over year, the demand for oil increases, so more continues to be produced, and yeah, it's finite. So the more we use it, the faster it reduces until, yeah. The only problem with that is, like, even if we have electric cars, if we do run out of fossil fuels, there is no good replacement for rubber at all.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at this is just one source, but I'm seeing like a graph. I'm looking at a graph right now where they're saying basically 100 years.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
They're saying by 2081, it's gonna get pretty scarce.
Yeah, I could see that. So I mean, this is why we have to do it now. This is why we have to cut our consumption, switch to electric cars.
Sure.
So that then we actually have fossil fuels for the things that matter. Like, that's the thing with people that go on about, oh, let's just end using oil forever. No.
Yeah.
Because it's not just gasoline we're talking about. Rubber, petroleum byproducts, like all of these things. So many things in our daily lives rely on oil,
well, I should
even
point
if
out,
it's not fuel.
Yeah, you're right. And actually, I should point out this graph points out coal, gas, and oil. And oil, it looks like, is going to run out way before coal.
That wouldn't surprise me. Coal consumption has gone down considerably. The only people using it are like places that still have coal plants, and those are fewer and far between now.
The bigger concern for the car industry is gas, though.
Yeah.
Because everything runs on gas still. The majority of cars run on gas, so they better get their ass in gear. At the very least, like, I would hope that car companies, if they're not investing in battery technology, for example,
they're investing heavily.
They need to be doing this right now.
And the thing is, Tesla, like, like in all things, Elon Musk will save us all.
With an elevator, a space elevator?
Oh yeah, that's probably somewhere in there in the master plan. But yeah, the Gigafactory, as discussed previously, is going to enable way cheaper batteries. And they've opened it up to other companies. Like, half of the Gigafactory is actually being run by... I forget what company, but they've got a company that basically has their own section inside the factory that they're basically going to use Tesla's pipeline to construct batteries for themselves and sell them. So,
and it's kind of amazing when you think about it. This kind of, in many ways, in comparison to the sheer scope of the most of these car companies, that Tesla is still kind of the scrappy startup, and they're excelling in pulling ahead of everybody else, and it's kind of embarrassing for them.
Yeah,
it's embarrassing for General Motors. It's embarrassing for everyone.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the appealing advantage of startups. They can move quickly. They can adopt new tech much faster than these large corporations, because large corporations are stuffed with middle management and so on and so on and so on. And it takes 12 meetings just to decide, yes, let's invest in batteries. So meanwhile, at Tesla, Elon Musk is just like, let's do this. Yeah, cool. All right. And then they do it. That's it. It's like comparing Apple Pay to using an actual credit card.
Right.
I mean, obviously there's downsides to startups, but overall the benefit is they're able to operate at a much faster pace of innovation than traditional companies. And that's why they always pull ahead, because as the Facebook adage goes, they move fast and break things.
But you have to do that.
Or ship fast and break things. I forget what it was, but yeah. So Tesla's out there and they're building charging stations, and they've built the Gigafactory, and they're going to release the Model 3 next year, and they're doing all these other things. And probably the best thing they've been doing is open sourcing their technology. So all of their patents, they will not go in after anyone that uses them. Their patents are completely up for grabs to anyone that wants to take advantage of them.
Interesting. I did not know that, but yeah, that's a good way of encouraging further development. They want to work towards building a better society. So what better way to make those
exactly
adoptable that here, just take what we have, build upon it. Let's all contribute and make this a thing. Let's make electric cars a thing.
Exactly. That has been their position since day one, and it's really paying off for them. Like the Gigafactory, having that entire other company working out of the factory is another move that's totally in lockstep with that. It's saying, we've built this massive factory for one purpose, building batteries. You can come in, build your own batteries. We just want to build these crazy batteries for everybody. And that's what they're doing.
Well, and let's get realistic too. There's obviously, it is somewhat altruistic, but there is a capital benefit of doing this, because then everyone's coming to you.
Yes, of course. But it's that perfect unicorn of having both at the same time. They're being altruistic and still making a shit ton of money doing it.
They're building the goodwill with customers and making money, which is great.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what Apple's been doing for years. Asterisk. I mean, yeah, Apple has pulled some doozies over the years, but for the most part, they pretty much operate like that.
So this week you walked in here with an iPhone 7 Plus.
Yep.
For the remainder of the show, would you like to share with the audience what your phone was like?
Well, it's pretty big, but I have big hands and I got used to it in about 20 minutes. Now it just seems like a regular sized phone, which is weird, but...
And you're never going to go back to a smaller screen?
No.
Do you find you can type better on it?
Yep, and I like having more room for everything. Like, shifting from 4-inch to 4.7 was huge, but this like there's just so much more room for everything, and the landscape support is really cool.
Let's talk about the camera, because I was nerding out on the camera when you took some sample photos, and this is the most impressive camera I've ever seen on not only any phone, but on any iPhone. It is substantial, that dual lens system, with the effect that you can get with the blurred, the focus. The slightly blurred background with focus on the person that's in front of
camera. It's shallow depth of field.
Shallow depth of field.
Creates bokeh on the background. But I have to be perfectly honest. Unfortunately, the 7 Plus is not the best camera on the market.
What's a better camera? There's a smartphone on the market right now with a better camera than that?
Yeah. Would you believe the Galaxy Note 7?
No, I don't believe it.
Takes better photos?
I don't believe it. Does it have a dual lens system?
No.
So it's a single lens with what, a better f-stop on it?
I think it's 1.8.
And more megapixels?
No, it's 12.
Does it have optical image stabilization?
Yes. I've seen some comparison shots, and it does seem to have slightly better tonality, and most importantly, it seems to take sharper photos, like more detail.
I can't comment. I haven't seen the side-by-side comparisons, but anyway, the iPhone not, 7 not to camera put a complete, is still amazing.
Yeah, not to put a total damper on things, but for the iPhone, it is an incredible camera. It has two lenses. One is a 2.2 aperture telephoto lens, and one is a 1.9 aperture wide angle lens. And when you take a photo with it, it actually snaps a photo with both lenses and uses a software pipeline to stitch them together into a single better photo.
And does that work well?
It seems to. The low light performance has been drastically improved over the previous model. I can take shots at twilight or just before sunrise and it looks great.
Shots that may have been completely black or almost near completely dark.
Yes.
Before are now visible.
Yeah. There's also a great deal more clarity in the shots, better balance of light. In general, the saturation is better. Capture of color is now using a wide color gamut, and the iPhone 7 display panel also supports wide color gamut. It's essentially the same panel as the iPad Pro 9.7 inch.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Except it doesn't have True Tone because they couldn't fit the True Tone sensors around the screen, unfortunately, because True Tone currently requires four different optical sensors on the front glass.
You know, it's really amazing that we've gone to this point now where, unless you're a professional photographer, there is no incentive to carry a separate camera anymore.
No.
And I've heard of people that own DSLRs that say, you know, in those few occasions where I would take it with me, I have no reason to take it with me anymore. And it's this new iPhone makes, I think this is going to be a big shift for a lot of people, and the photos that you can take with it are so impressive to me that this is going to change like so many people's lives, like the amazing memories that we're now able to capture on current smartphones is just incredible. And the only thing I wish that Apple would do is actually give people more free storage so that they wouldn't possibly lose their photos if something happened.
Well, that's the great thing about the iPhone 7. They have bumped the base storage finally, and this deserves a huge all caps finally, to 32 gigs.
That in and of itself is great, but they still haven't done anything with iCloud storage. You still only get 5 gigabytes of free storage. So if your phone is stolen, you lose your photos.
Yeah, they really want people to buy additional storage. I don't know why.
Bah. I mean, the first tier is what, 99 cents? It just seems so cheap of them to say, yeah, we're going to risk our customers losing their data for 99 cents a month. Really? Really?
Yeah.
I don't begrudge them for wanting to make money. I understand that. If somebody needs like a terabyte of storage, I understand you should charge them. That's not what I'm getting at. But for most people, I mean, just give them 50 gigabytes of storage.
Yeah, I'd really like to see them bump it.
I mean, people, like, no, your mom and dad should never worry about losing photos, ever, no. Ever. And yeah. That's still happening today.
It is. And for people who are worried, I mean, sure, there's privacy stuff, but I would say just get Google Photos.
Yeah, but even Google only gives you, what, 16 gigabytes?
No.
No, sorry. Unlimited. It's unlimited, but they down-res the photos.
A little bit. You can barely notice. Like, if you want the original photos, it counts towards your Google Drive storage. But, yeah. The down-res.
When you just see what Google is doing with storage, it's laughable what Apple is doing.
Yeah,
and it's a constant complaint.
But at the same time, Google offers it for free because they scan all the photos with their machine learning crap. And
right, there are obviously downsides. I'm not saying that there aren't any downsides with that, but just examining the storage comparisons and what they offer, it's embarrassing.
It is. Apple really needs to bump things up. I mean, to their credit, they did reduce the price on some of the plans. When they brought in the new terabyte tier.
Yeah, the rest of the tiers went down in price by a couple of bucks, actually.
Yeah, so it's not that bad, but at the same time...
It's the principle, like 50 gigabytes for 99 cents. Just give it to them.
I know.
Just give it to them. Like, as someone working in an Apple store, like the last thing I would probably want to hear is, you know, something's happened to my phone and I didn't have an iCloud backup because I ran out of storage space and I've now lost 3 years worth of family photos. Like Apple, I'm sure, doesn't want to hear that, but they are hearing that and they're going to continue to hear those complaints because they are so stubborn on moving on this.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate. I keep hoping they'll do something and they haven't done anything. And I think it's just starting to look like they want people to spend the money and that's that. It seems really greedy to me.
Well, it does seem greedy and it seems to go against the things that they have said that they don't want to do.
Yeah,
to their customers.
I think the thing is they see bumping the storage on the 7 as a way to address those concerns, but I mean, you're just putting a band-aid on it because you get the 7, you have twice as much storage as before, sure, but that just means it's going to take twice as long to run out of space. So, I don't know.
I don't know either. You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight. And the single best way to support us is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and join the other lovely people that have become regular donators. And that helps us cover our hosting and bandwidth costs and all sorts of things like that, because producing the show costs actual money. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes if you haven't already, because I know some podcast players allow you to just listen to individual episodes. But if you use iTunes, we would sincerely appreciate it if you could drop a review. It helps other people find the podcast and makes us feel good. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu for show feedback. And Michael is at Zen Impulse. I am at Zero Distraction. And we're available everywhere else. Facebook, you can check us out under Hologram Radio, Instagram. And if you'd like to send us some feedback the old-fashioned way, not by phone, but by email, send an email to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org. And that'll go to both Michael and myself.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.